I'm going to quote Mark Twain, that the rumors of my retirement are greatly exaggerated, but I am going to step down as cancer center director. Time for several reasons. The president is going to run the country at age 80, but I'll be 79, and the new person is going to have to do something much harder than running the country, which is to write a CCSG grant.
So you've just heard Shelley Erb talk about stepping down as director of UNC Leinberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. Shelley is going back to the lab after a career total of 22 years and 5 cancer center support grants. That's the CCSGs you've just heard him mention. Shelley's is one of the sweetest jobs in oncology, with a cancer research budget that includes $50 million given by the state of North Carolina each year. My name is Paul Goldberg. I'm the editor and publisher of The Cancer Letter, and you're listening to a special edition of the Cancer History Project podcast, in which we talk a little more about the present and the future. And this episode is about Shelley and UNC. If Shelley were a Tar Heel basketball player, the number on his jersey would be retired. And I say this with a caveat, I am a Duke alum. Joining me and Shelley in this episode is Ned Sharpless, former NCI Leinberger director, former NCI director, and former FDA acting commissioner. Ned is now a professor of cancer policy Ned is now a professor of cancer policy and innovation at UNC School of Medicine, and he chairs the search committee charged with recruiting Shelley's replacement. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for finding the time to meet with me on this. And Shelley, are the rumors correct that you're thinking of stepping down as director?
Yeah, I wrote something that said, I'm going to quote Mark Twain, that the rumors of my retirement are greatly exaggerated. But I am going to step down as cancer center director. Time for several reasons. The president is going to run the country at age 80, but I'll be 79, and the new person is going to have to do something much harder than running the country, which is to write a CCSG grant. So they'll need a little time to get together and do that. So this is the right time to make a transition.
Can we do some statistics, some baseball statistics here? How many years have you been director in both stints?
So let me go back. I joined Joe in 1977 and helped write that core grant, which was the second one from UNC. I think I became assistant director in 81, but I think there were only 3 people. It was a rapid rise. Associate deputy, and then I actually took over as director in 97. So in essence, from 97 to now, with an interregnum for my colleague on this call. Let's do the math. It's probably 22, I guess.
How many CCSGs, just since I'm going to do the numbers?
So I it depends on how you count. So I've been a substantial author since 1977. So how many does that count? As director, it's, it's what? 5, I think, but
five.
I've had a long run at dealing with this arcane process.
I did one, and that was plenty.
Well, Ned, you're running the search for Shelley's replacement. What?
Yeah, that's correct. Shelley has done a masterful job as cancer center director for decades at the University of North Carolina, and has really built that institution from like sort of the three people he described, this, you know, several hundred FTE, you know, multi-million dollar organization that is a terrific job now. It's one of the best jobs in a cancer center director jobs in academia for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is this terrific institution that has a great school of public health, a great basic science, a great clinical shop, and a large university where you've got a law school and a business school and, you know, an undergraduate college, and they all collaborate together on cancer research and really make this a formidable and wonderful Matrix Cancer Center. And so, and the state supports it. So there's a very generous support for the University of North Carolina Cancer Center through the thing called the University Cancer Research Fund, which is, you know, sort of more than $50 million a year that's been, I don't know, what are we in, like year 14, Shelley, or something like that?
It's actually probably 15.
Yeah, so very considerable support from the state of North Carolina for cancer research. So it's a wonderful job. And with Shelley stepping down, the dean has asked me to direct a national search to replace Shelley Earp, and a job I used to hold. So, you know, certainly something that's very dear to both of our hearts. And, you know, I'm very excited to do that. I think we should get a terrific crop of candidates and, you know, hope to bring in the person who, you know, has a vision for, you know, this great Matrix Cancer Center.
It is for the Cancer Center.
Yeah, no, it is written, it is for cancer research, basically. It is to develop a world-class cancer research entity at the state institution.
You know, there's a saying about the NCI cancer centers, Paul, that you've heard, which is if you've seen one cancer center, you've seen one cancer center. You know, they're all different and all these jobs are quite different. And you know, and as someone who's visited the majority of the United States cancer centers, I can tell you what's special about UNC is this tremendous state support. It's this great public university with all these capabilities and significant state support. So as opposed to other institutions where, you know, the cancer center director has to kind of find funds from this clinical service line or from development or these other pools, you know, the Cancer Center at UNC does that too, but in addition to that has this very strong and generous state support that doesn't exist except in a few places. And it's very collaborative and it allows the Cancer Center to sort of build things, to build across the School of Public Health and the medical school and the undergraduate university and, you know, other programs to create other parts of the university, create these dynamic programs with multiple parts. And having some funding from the Cancer Center to do that is just crucial.
Mm-hmm. And Paul, it's really bi-directional. What's important is the reason this was instituted by the state legislature, and it's been bipartisan. It was led by Democrats when it was actually voted on. At the same time, they voted to fund a cancer hospital at UNC. But it's been bipartisan, and the Republicans have supported it. You know, just as much. And it also relies on the fact that we're the state's hospital and we take care of people regardless of their ability to pay. And in order to do that so that everybody gets the same quality care, that state support has allowed us to develop research and innovations across this, and it serves the state. So there's a lot of work that we're doing with the Cancer Fund in statewide prevention. We have a remarkable database. We have the last 1 million cancer cases in the state of North Carolina in a database that are linked to claims data, not just Medicare, which everybody has, but Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is our primary employer, and state employees. So we can link everybody in the state who has cancer to claims, and we can tell which counties have colon cancer deaths and people did not get colonoscopy prior to that. So we can use that to develop, you know, prevention programs with the cancer fund across the state.
But you also one of the Cancer Center directors who've been especially visionary on disparities. I mean, you jumped on that and really made it happen, really.
Paul, that's a wonderful piece. You know, one of the key things that ever happened in the history of the Cancer Center was really in the early 1990s, when we got together with myself and a number of other people who were working on multidisciplinary care. We put in for the breast cancer score in the first round, and we were not a household word in breast cancer at that time. But what we proposed really sprung, a lot of things sprung out of that, because we devised the Carolina Breast Cancer Study, which was this population-based study that was the one that showed that African-American women had a higher rate of triple negative breast cancer. That's the original observation. Everybody's gone on to see that, but it flowed from that part of the score. And the other part of the score was called North Carolina Breast Cancer Screening Project, where we did an actual 5-county test of whether lay health advisors would be able to increase the rates of mammography in African-American women. Now, you know who led that.
Mm-hmm.
That was my wife. It's not that we weren't interested in disparities, but they gave us not only the passion, but an imprimatur nationally to continue that work. And we've really, it's flowed from that ever since.
If I may, Paul, you know, I sort of, you know, grew up at the University of North Carolina under Shelley's leadership when I was junior faculty and then deputy director under him, and then actually cancer director, while Shelley never moved from his office. So in some ways we were sort of co-directors for that period. And, you know, I sort of marinated, you know, I was a basic scientist and ran a lab, but I certainly saw the great things going on in health services research at UNC, and particularly the focus on cancer disparities, which is an important topic to the state of North Carolina. I mean, which has, you know, it has an Appalachian population in the West, has, you know, both a American Indian population and a Black and Hispanic population in the East, and is certainly diverse SES in terms of socioeconomic status and education. And so, you know, that, and a great school of public health to study these topics. And so when I went to the National Cancer Institute, you know, this felt very familiar. The NCI has this strong focus that had been growing strongly for years before I got there, but certainly during the period I was there under Bob Croyle's leadership, to study, you know, cancer health disparities. And it felt very familiar because this is a topic that I think Shelley had identified, you know, a decade earlier and really focused on. Another area like that also was Shelley's focus on women in science. I think he was really one of the first people to say, you know, having successful women scientists is more than just, you know, go out there and get a grant, guys. I mean, you had to create a culture and environment that would support women and would understand the challenges of women in science. And I think he was really an early adopter of a, sort of spotting some of those problems and promoting women aggressively in science. And that was, you know, again, something that, you know, really came to the fore when I was at NCI, but felt very familiar because, you know, Shelley had been doing that for decades.
Yeah, I guess one thing that I cannot understand, even covering cancer centers as closely as I do, is why there aren't enough women, there aren't many women cancer center directors. Why such a disparity? And is this an opportunity to hire a woman director to take this magnificent job?
That certainly would be something that Ned and the search committee should be taking into account. I mean, in the end, it's a big job. It requires somebody with, you know, some good scientific skills, but much better interpersonal skills. Often those are found in women, I've found over my lifetime. So I think that that's something that will be part and parcel of the decision making. It's not my decision. In the end, it's the decision of the dean of the School of Medicine. But the search committee, I think, and I'll turn it over to Ned, yeah, will clearly concentrate on you know, how we diversify leadership.
Yeah, you know, the as you know, Paul, a search like this is governed by state law, and so any qualified candidate will consider strongly. But I think this would be a great job to bring in some diversity in terms of leadership with regard to gender, race, ethnicity, or any of the other, you know, wonderful ways we can promote diversity within the institution. I think You know, at the NCI and FDA, I had a lot of luck hiring terrific women into wonderful jobs, and Katrina Goddard, for example. And I think that you know, there are many qualified leaders in cancer research who are women or who are underrepresented minorities who would be great candidates for a role like this. You know, cancer director job is changing. It's gone under some evolution, and I think it used to be a bit more, particularly in the larger centers, you know, focused on basic science, and because of the large complexity of running a large protocol office, the job has migrated a bit more clinical at most centers that are not, you know, basic science centers. And for that reason, I think we've seen an evolution in what kinds of candidates are running cancer centers. And it used to be more sort of hardcore basic scientists, and now we're seeing more clinicians and health service researchers and, you know, other types. So, you know, we would consider, you know, qualified candidates with a diversity of interests and a diversity of backgrounds, as well as the other types of diversity I mentioned. But I think, you know, it's a great job. It's the opportunity to build things across basic science, clinical, health services research, in a wonderful, you know, collaborative university. And I hope we will attract those sorts of candidates. But as Shelley said, ultimately, it is the dean's decision. And, you know, I've told the dean that we will strive for a diverse candidate pool that will allow him to make the ideal selection.
And Paul, I would say that the school under the last two deans, Bill Roper and now Wesley Burks, has done an excellent job at the chair level. We, I think, had a, I think we've had gone from one chair of multiple departments to almost half of our chairs. Our executive dean is now a woman. I think I was involved in the search last year at the university level for four deans of schools, and all four selected were women. So I think UNC is and its leadership, who will make these decisions, is really doing a good job in that arena, finding great people, but happen to have a more diversity. So I'm hopeful in that way.
Mm-hmm. I have kind of a question that I guess is more of an ONCA political question, but rooted in science. Would it be possible now, where we are, where the way cancer centers are structured, the way they are run, to have directors who stay on for a quarter century? Is this going to continue to happen, or do you think there's more of a pressure to bring in new science, new people, and maybe is this job evolving in the way that it won't happen again, that somebody stays for 20 years?
I don't, you know, Simone's maxims. When you've seen one cancer center in one university, you've seen one. In 2025, we'll be 50-year cancer center, and so far we've had three directors. And so I think longevity works in some places. It really depends upon the, again, interpersonal skills and the trust that one develops, and also the personal aspects. I mean, you know, Ned was a fantastic and would have had a long run because he was young when he started, and he got plucked for something that obviously was great national service. So I wouldn't say that we couldn't have somebody that has a decade or two decade long run. You'd have to start with somebody that's a little bit younger. And so I think that's part of it, but I don't think age is going to be the determination. It would be good to think of somebody that's going to be here for at least a decade.
Mm-hmm. Ned, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, we used to talk about this a lot when I was at NCI about, you know, what would be the ideal thing you would want for the cancer centers. And I think Shelley, you know, pointed out that because these jobs are so different, it's really hard to say, you know, that there's any one specific phenotype that works for all cancer centers, that some places, you know, may have different needs from others. But there's certainly, I think even now today, while, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, the process of running a cancer center and the complexity of the job and the demands on a cancer center director. But having said that, there's certainly still some really great jobs in running cancer centers nationally. And I do suspect there will be individuals that stay in some of those jobs for a long time, you know, that find these places that are great to work and also, you know, where they feel fulfilled and want to stay. So I think there are, you know, I don't think the era of the two-decade cancer center director is over. I think that we'll continue to see that at certain places. But, you know, as Shelley said, it's both, there's got to be the right kind of niche to, you know, to foster a cancer center director who wants to stay for a long time. And then also that cancer center can't get, you know, plucked off to be a dean or a NCI director or some other job, which, you know, happens occasionally too. But I think the skill set may be changing, as I alluded. I think, you know, the protocol office of the clinical cancer centers is now so significant that, understanding that is really a requirement for the job. I think also many cancer centers, you know, population sciences and health service research is so large that having a understanding of that part of the shop is really important. And then, of course, there are cancer centers that are very, very committed to, you know, molecular biology, basic science, and the director of those places might be more skewed to that end. So there'll be a diversity of styles. And then, of course, you know, there's also the whole difference between the matrix cancer centers that are embedded in large universities and the freestanding cancer centers where the job is quite different and you're sort of CEO of a hospital system at the same time. So I think, the goal of the NCI was to remain flexible with a mechanism that, you know, their funding could work for all of those, you know, different approaches to sort of integrated cancer research at various institutions.
In terms of transition, how much time will your successor have to prepare the next grant? Because I think you have qualified for a 2-year extension.
We're going in for that, Paul. And so the reason for doing this, this year rather than next year, which would have also been a possibility, you know, this will give the new director 3 solid years to be in charge, and then kind of towards the end of that three-year period to start writing the grant. So we're only in year 3 of what will hopefully be a 7-year grant. So that's one of the reasons for the timing is that, you know, it's an interesting thing that the CCSG is so important in our minds and in our training as cancer center directors. It's a pretty small part of our budget, but it is something that it's so important to us for bragging rights and for bringing people together that we decided to make the decision this year so they would have even a little bit more time. But it is an interesting conundrum about how important the CCSG is with respect to how you feel about yourself and your cancer center versus the actual financial piece.
Wow. How long do you think it will take to run the search?
I think we have one of the best administrators in the country doing that. So it would be good to have this done in 6 months, which is, I think, very doable. I just ran a search for the university for the office of the vice chancellor of research for the entire university. And I was able to get that search done in 3.5 months. So the idea that you need a year to run a search is just poppycock, frankly. Mm-hmm. People either want to be involved, and a job like this is such a good job that if candidates are serious, they will make themselves available for Zoom calls or for visits. There's no need to stretch this out.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fascinating. I've been struggling with this. How does a cancer center function now with the recent, with the new political environment, the recent Supreme Court rulings? How does that fit into what UNC has in its really DNA?
That's I'll start with that. You know, I'm on the the NCI, Board of Scientific Advisors. And we had a long discussion about this with Monica and everybody at the last couple of meetings. And Ned actually is certainly knows about this. You know, the NCI and NIH have said that they have guidelines that they would like to see people take and use for helping to run their research organizations, but they do understand that it has to be done in the context of state law, that the NIH cannot overrule state law. The Supreme Court has ruled with us and Harvard to change the ability of the university to use affirmative action writ large in the selection of its undergraduates. I think we're all waiting to see whether that kind of decision gets broadened. But even in that decision, there was a recognition that the that diversity of thought, and they may not have used that language, is important in many ways, and that people needed to construct language and guidelines that allowed this to happen without race being the number one criteria. And so when we look at disparities and underrepresented individuals in medicine, I think a lot of us have already shifted. Obviously, there's a the deficit of African Americans at the highest level in universities, but there also is a need for looking at rural areas and people from lower socioeconomic status backgrounds. So I think broadening the criteria is certainly something that our university is grappling with in this year's admission, because we really don't want to see a lack of, and I'll use the word diversity, across our undergraduate or our faculty. So I think, we have to be realistic about law, but the law does not preclude us really looking to take populations that can help us solve problems.
And DEI, does that affect that?
Well, I think, it's interesting. There seem to be words that are particularly problematic politically. And I think diversity of thought and background, I don't think is a problem. I think some of the, equity, inclusion seem to be a little bit more buzzword. So I think that diversity of thought that improves your institution, your company, your cancer center is still important.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously we wrestled with these topics extensively over the last, decades, and particularly when I was at NCI, even before this ruling. And I can tell you, I don't think the ruling in terms of running a cancer center changed things that much. Paul, the first initiative, which, the NIH funded and the NCI directed and was really developed by Sonia Springfield and Dina Singer and, others at the NCI working with other parts of the NIH, like the National Institute of Minority and Health Disparities, Eliseo Perez's shop. I think that initiative is unchanged by this ruling. That focused, the language about, what are the priorities of promoting diversity in the science workforce, that language was extensively scoured by various levels of government lawyers. And really was the idea was to promote diversity of thought, as Shelley said, and that's a broad rubric that includes, differences in background and ethnicity and race and gender and, geographic part of the country and interest. And so I think that, the promotion of diversity is uncontroversial and an unqualified good. I think we all believe that, exciting, vibrant institution is not going to look monolithic in terms of its leadership and composition. And so, that I think is still the case today, and I think unchanged by the ruling. I think explicit, policies that targeted on race or ethnicity won't do well, post the recent ruling, but actually weren't something that we used in the state of North Carolina extensively prior to the ruling, for activities related to faculty promotion and things like that really affect the cancer center roles. So I think that in some ways the job of the cancer center director to promote a a culture that is vibrant and diverse and recognizes a variety of faculty efforts is unchanged and still something that you can do in a positive, meaningful way along the lines of the goals of the first initiative. I do think that Shelley is correct that whether this affirmative action ruling, the Supreme Court ruling had anything to do with this or not, I don't know, but there is, I would say, nationally an appreciation that rurality in particular is a disparity that hasn't gotten enough focus at the national level. That if you really look at the cancer statistics, there are parts of the country where cancer mortality is not improving, where the gap between urban and rural populations is yawning and growing worse. And that topic it perhaps didn't get enough focus over the last few years as that gap kind of worsened and worsened. It was really Bob Croyle and Stanya Springfield and others that sort of brought this to the NCI's attention as well as others at the NIH, and certainly led to this sort of focus on, for example, regions of persistent poverty where there's been low socioeconomic status in a significant populated part of the county for decades, and the cancer outcomes, as you can imagine, in those areas are really poor. And so I think that I don't know that had anything to do with the Supreme Court ruling, but that is a new area of focus today that I think is good. That those are if we're going to make progress in this country in terms of cancer mortality, we have to make progress for all patients, even those that live in areas with low access and low SES and these sort of structural barriers to good care. So I think that there is some evolution in terms of what we're thinking about at academic centers in terms of what is diversity look like, what does it mean to create an inclusive workforce, what should be the goals of care in terms of promoting equality of outcome. But I think the day-to-day job of a cancer center director, particularly at a public university cancer center like the University of North Carolina, really hasn't changed that much. I think what was a good idea 5 years ago remains a good idea today in terms of promoting a diverse workforce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear that both of you see it this way. I guess one question, really crucial question, is Shelley, what are you going to do next? What's the next chapter?
So one, I just got a 5-year R1, I have an active lab in a fascinating area. I, like many other people, are struggling to become a card-carrying immunologist because that's how we cure cancer. So my lab focuses on some genes that we cloned that actually have potentially an effect in the tumor microenvironment. So that's a big part. Paul, we've recruited 93 people over the last 3.5 years. And when you're recruiting, you get very close to people and you try to convince them that to come here and you're going to take care of them. And then you go on to the next year's recruitment. So I feel like I have a lot of meetings to do with the people that I've recruited and to try to help them feel like I'm there for them and mentoring. So I think I'll have a lot more time rather than answering emails all the time to actually talk to junior faculty and help create the kinds of interdisciplinary types of things that we do, I think, do well, but we can always do better. And then I'm pretty sure I'm the only cancer center director that actually has experience in stepping down and helping the new director. I've been trained by Nancy Davidson, who is head of our external advisory board, on how to sit in the back of the room and be quiet. But I will hopefully be helpful to the next person. It's a complicated university, and so I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere.
Well, does it mean you'll be in the same office? You did not move out with that one.
I think that will be up to the next director. They may want that for a while, or they may say, Shelley, get closer to your lab. We'll let them decide that.
That's fantastic. Is there anything I forgot to ask?
No, I just like to let me reiterate before Shelley answers that you know, Shelley has been a terrific leader for the University of North Carolina for decades in these multiple roles, and he's built this wonderful organization. And, you know, the University of North Carolina and the state of North Carolina and cancer patients nationally owe this real debt to the great, you know, research he's led and the teams he's led. And, you know, so I want to be the first of many to thank Shelley for, you know, his work on behalf of cancer patients nationally in the state of North Carolina and, you know, the wonderful work he's done.
Yeah. So, Paul, the only thing I would emphasize, you know, I came here in 1966 to the School of Medicine and became imbued with, you know, our desire and ability to be the state's hospital. I've grown up under that, and I've tried to use that. I had the great good fortune to get drafted. And the only reason why that was great good fortune, because I didn't have to go to, you know, Vietnam. I had a lab in the Army. And secondly, I met my wife and started that 50-year journey. We came back here. We've had, we've been so lucky. We would tell each other that all the time. But I just want to emphasize that to the extent that I've been successful, it's been because of this wonderful partnership I had with Joanne.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, thank you very much for talking with me.
Well, Paul, we always appreciate the cancer letter. And in many ways, I think we've managed to stay out of certain aspects.
Thank you for listening to this special episode. This conversation is also available on cancerletter.com. Since 1973, the Cancer Letter has been an independent weekly publication, and it has been the leading source of information on issues that shape oncology. Yes, soon we will be celebrating our 50th anniversary. So, more to come.